Welcome to the Get Out Podcast. We are going to be talking about some outdoor cooking today. And by we, I mean myself, Spencer Mankin. We have James Kincaid here, and we have Billy Newland.
All right, all right, all right.
Thank you, James McConaughey.
Hey, I was going to say that. You stole my line.
Well, since you're...
greatest compliment I've ever received before.
Yeah, right. So outdoor cooking is just cooking, but it's outside, right? Like, it could be any kind of cooking, but it's just literally just done outside. Now, when most people think outdoor cooking, they're probably thinking of like campfires and grilling stuff over the fire, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that. It could be, you know, grilling stuff in your backyard or, like you said, in someone's pizza oven, but it's literally just done outside.
Yeah, I kind of fall into that category of thinking it's automatically done camping, kind of out in the wilderness, not necessarily in the backyard.
And I think that's probably what we're going to be more focused on today, because that's what we all like doing. But we don't want to exclude anybody, you know. It's an all-inclusive world now, so I think as long as it's cooking and you're outside, we're going to call it outdoor cooking.
So, oh, yeah, fair enough. Sure.
Yeah. So let's kick things off with, continue on with what are the kind of types, different things you can do with outdoor cooking, different ways you can cook.
Favorite one is grilling.
Classic. Yep.
Love the grill.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the most common type. And a lot of people will lump in barbecuing with grilling. I know that's a big kind of a faux pas, something you shouldn't do here in Texas, because we take it very seriously. And not that it's a Texas only thing, but we do like we do take pride in our barbecue.
Oh yeah, dude! Tennessee and Carolinas, don't call that grilling, buddy.
Yeah,
it's barbecuing.
Oh yeah, yeah. When you've got an 18-wheeler pulling a giant 50-foot smoker, I don't think that counts as grilling anymore.
No,
no, no. See, I like to smoke. I like to smoke everything. I got a big double barrel smoker, big firebox. And then down at Dad's, we got James, you've seen it. Actually, we got that massive single barrel smoker with that big firebox there. And the, basically what we call our pit shed, where there's like two or three different pits.
Oh yeah.
Out there in the shed. Yeah.
Yep.
So, and then, like I say, I got that new double barrel smoker. It's an Oklahoma Joe, and that thing is fantastic.
What do you like to smoke?
As
far as food goes, let's stay on track here. Just food.
Okay. For the record, I don't smoke anything. So let's get that cleared up.
You just like to smoke meat.
I don't smoke. Yeah, smoke meat. Briskets, pork loins, beef roast, pork roast, anything that I can get on there and smoke it, I'm going to smoke it. Fish, I'll smoke fish. Ducks from duck season, I'll smoke them. I'll pluck them out, get them all cleaned up, and freeze them until summer rolls around, and I'll smoke a whole duck.
There you go. So what is what's the advantage, or like why do you prefer smoking meats versus just grilling them?
I like to sit around and drink my whiskey while it smokes all day.
Again, I think that's pretty common, yeah.
I don't know, man. It takes a lot more. To me, it feels like it's, even though I know what I'm doing, at the end of the day, it still feels like a challenge, so to say, because you got to maintain the proper heat, maintain, you know, the wood that you got to put in there and whatnot, and I don't know. Smoking meat, too, it's just a classic thing from the past that, you know, was used way back when, and it kind of helps preserve meat a little bit longer, too, depending on exactly what type of meat you're smoking in the first place. It's just what I like.
There you go.
And you honestly can't go wrong with the low and slow. I don't think I've ever really had anything between pork, turkey, chicken, sausage. If it's been smoked, man, I've never had one that tasted bad. It's all been good. You typically get really good smoke flavor in the majority of the meat, which I'm a big fan of. I know when you get a lot of people that grill, especially first time people that grill, it's real easy to mess up grilling, because if you got it way too hot, way too cold. It just, you can easily overdo it on the grill
or underdo it.
I kind of got some respect for someone who's like a king of the grill. Like my uncle, man, that's all he does. It's all on the grill. I mean, I grew up with him doing everything from essentially even Thanksgiving dinner. He would do the turkey on the grill. That's just, he's been the king of it. Now, with the different types of fuel, because I know there's a lot of people like, oh, you got to use wood. Oh, you got to go gas. Oh, you got to go charcoal. Like, Spencer, what is your favorite?
Well, cooking with wood has been, you know, romanticized, especially with all the luxuries that we have these days. I do really enjoy cooking over a wood-burning fire. But I'm going to be completely honest. I love the convenience of gas, of propane. I love being able to go out, crank up the Blackstone, and just have it ready to go. I don't have to build a fire. I mean, I can be ready to cook in about 10 minutes, and it's very, very convenient. Also, when I'm outdoors, sometimes because we get a lot of droughts in Texas, you just can't cook over wood because there's burn bans all the time. So, yeah, having that gas, being able to cook over gas is very, very convenient for me. And I think for a lot of people.
Yeah, not to mention, typically when we're out there camping and doing the over the fire cooking, it's typically during hunting season. And the last thing you want to do is smell like a campfire when you're trying not to smell like anything.
Yeah.
When you're out there in the blind.
Yep. And well, since hunting season is, you know, November on, at least for deer season here for rifle season, it's cold. So we typically use the campfire for staying warm. And then we use the gas stoves for cooking.
Oh, yeah.
So it is nice to have both. But sometimes, you know, I like to cook over a wood fire.
So on the thing with the Blackstone, because the Blackstone has been like the big hype for the last 2 years, for at least what I can see, as far as everyone wants them in their backyard. The one thing, the one that I found that I thought was really cool, is actually the one that Bob bought for this past deer season. It's literally the little 17-inch Blackstone propane fed.
Yeah.
And he literally just keeps it in the trailer, pulls it out, and there he goes.
Yeah. I will say that is a very convenient size because my wife, I guess last year for Christmas, bought me the big 36-inch one. And that's great, but it's just me and her. We don't have kids. And, you know, that's a lot of surface area to cook for two people. So we always end up, you know, cooking a bunch of stuff and we'll meal prep and that's great, but it takes longer to heat up and it's just more to keep clean. And that's really the big kind of downside to a Blackstone for me, is you got to keep it seasoned. And if you don't, man, it'll rust on you quick. And so because use it very often, I feel like every time I go to use it, it's like, okay, well, I got to reseason it now. So it kind of takes away from the convenience of being able to cook in 10 minutes because I got to spend 30 minutes heating it up and seasoning it. And that's not even a really good season. That's just, you know, getting the dust off or the rust off and just getting it ready to cook on. So, yeah, I really like it. But as little grilling on that thing as we do, I probably wouldn't have ever bought one, if that makes sense. But that 17-inch size, especially for me and my wife, that'd be perfect because it's a great size.
Oh, yeah, dude. And the one that I actually really, like, personally that I want to get is the 22-inch, because a 22-inch comes with the actual stand that's built into it. So you can collapse it with the stand, and then you can stand it up with it. It's completely mobile, and I really like that one.
Yeah, that's the other downside about having my big 36-inch one is, like, I'm not going to load it up and throw it in the back of the truck just to go take it down to your place, you know, for a weekend, because it's big and it's heavy. And it just, it, to me, it's not really worth it. But if you had a smaller one that was on a collapsible stand, I would probably use it a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like with mine, cause I think it's a 40. I think that's a step up from the 36 or maybe a 44. I don't remember what. The one that we have actually has the three air fry baskets underneath. Yep.
That's nice.
And the only reason I got that one is, let's just say some people at Walmart put the wrong product under the wrong clearance sign. So
there you go.
I walked out with a very, very nice Blackstone for very, very cheap.
There you go.
Dude, I remember you were telling me about that and they honored it too.
Oh yeah. That was a good thing there, but it's massive. it's just about as wide as the bed of my truck. So yeah. Loading that thing in it up to go out somewhere is not going to happen.
Yep. But James, I really like your little portable stove that you use out at the ranch. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, you're talking about my little Coleman foreign one?
Yeah.
Dude, I love that little thing, man. Griddle. What is it all kind of like? It's a grill, a griddle, a wok, and an oven.
Yep.
It's awesome. It runs off your little 1 gallon Coleman propane tanks, which last a while. I've cooked probably a whole weekend, you know, 3 square meals a day on it. Mm-hmm. And I still didn't go through a bottle of it over a weekend. And what I really like about it is you can completely break it down and it fits perfectly in one of those black and yellow totes we were talking about for camping. Mm-hmm. And it just sits right in there. Yeah. On that one, I really like it. It's just because of the fact that it is smaller and the burners are really decent size. It heats up super fast.
Yep.
And the nice thing about the actual griddle is that with the ceramic that's in it, it cools off really quick.
Yeah.
So even after you've been cooking on it for 30, 40 minutes, you shut that puppy off with about 15 minutes, it's cold to the touch.
Well,
so you don't have to worry about it retaining heat and potentially catching your toad on fire.
Yeah, or melting it. The other nice thing about the way it's designed is it's basically like an, I guess you're familiar, most people will be familiar with the big green egg. So this isn't that, but it is kind of enclosed in an egg shape like that. And so the bottom burner is not as susceptible to wind as a lot of the other stoves out there. And it retains that heat really well. So when you put your griddle top or whatever you want, it basically covers most of that surface area of the burner. And so it's a little bit more windproof and all that heat goes straight into the pan. Whereas on my classic Coleman, you know, green flip up two burner, yes, it has a small wind screen around it, but it's just you lose a lot of heat out of it. So where you can get an entire weekend out of your little 1 pound propane bottle, I can go through 2 or 3 in a weekend pretty easily with my Coleman stove.
Oh yeah.
Which
that's the one thing I really like about it. You just can't go wrong with it, especially because the majority of the time that I ever bust that puppy out is when it's typically just the boys and I.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not trying to, like, you know, when Bob comes out, you know, he's cooking for typically 5 to 6 people. And I know when you come out, you're typically cooking for the same.
Yep.
But on that little thing, dude, if you're just doing some burgers, it's big enough to put, you know, 3, like, you know, 1/2 pound to almost 1 pound patties a piece on there and grill it.
Mm-hmm.
You can cook a full breakfast on it. Mm-hmm. I think the most amount of eggs and bacon I cooked on at the single time was almost 10 eggs and like 8 or 9 strips of bacon, and it still fit.
Yeah.
And the one thing I do like about it is because obviously I love Applewood thick cut bacon. I don't know. I get everyone got their flavor, but that's my favorite.
Yeah.
And it renders down a lot and it pumps out a lot of grease.
Mm-hmm.
So you will run into a little bit getting over, you know, and getting down into the actual grill itself. But what I like about it is the actual bottom level of the grill is beneath the burner.
Mm-hmm.
So you never have to worry about grease hitting the flame ever.
Yep.
Like it's a good solid 1/2 inch to 3/4 inch higher than where the bowl sits, where everything can fall into. And it just makes it so much easier. It makes it safe too. One thing I really do like about it is it's super easy to clean and it's essentially nonstick. Like, I mean, all the amount of time I've cooked on it, I've never had anything stick to it.
Yeah.
It's great. And they're inexpensive too. I think that thing only cost, like $60 when we got it. And that was 3 years ago and they still sell them at Walmart, man. You go in there and you can find them everywhere.
Yeah.
And they're awesome. They're fun. They work. I like about them too, because if you really wanted to, even though I probably want to do it, cause it will take up a little bit of space, but you can fit it into a standard day pack.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to, like, it will fit in there perfectly.
Yeah. I probably wouldn't, but if you really wanted to, I guess you could. Yeah.
That's when that jet boil comes in handy.
Yeah. The jet boils or even like the little single burners that you can put on the top of a 1 pound propane bottle. I mean, I guess if you got a couple people and you got one person that's going to carry that and y'all got a bunch of food and stuff, it, you know, I guess that could be useful. But if it was like just me and you, like come this December when we're going out to New Mexico to do that cow elk hunt, I don't see us putting that in the day pack for what, 3 of us, 4 of us?
For sure it'll be 3 of us. I know Trent, which if y'all stay tuned in, you'll actually get to meet Trent. I know Trent likes to pack light and, you know, expedient because he's all about getting up on the mountain quick.
Yeah.
And then I know the unit that we're going to, apparently, according to the unit that we hunted mule deer in 2 years ago, is a lot steeper. Yeah. So it's gonna be interesting. So I ain't trying to put too much weight in my pack.
Yeah. My brother was he actually worked for the Forest Service out there in the Gila National Forest. And he said, prepare for massive boulders and be prepared to do a lot of crawling because there's a lot of brush. And then obviously a ton of elevation change. He said it's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll probably not pack the little 4-in-1 burner that you 4-in-1 cooker stove. Which, I don't know what you call that thing. It's just a 4-in-1.
It's literally just called a 4-in-1. Yeah. It's a 4-in-1 portable. It's what it's called. But essentially, it's all three.
But yeah, if we were going to like a campsite or something, it is fantastic for sure.
Oh yeah. Now, the one feature that I didn't use for the first time until probably, I think it was last year, it was the first time I ever used it, was actually using the lid for what it's meant for. It's actually a wok, and it makes it really nice because it's not no like narrow. It's a deep 6-inch lid. So when you flip it over, it makes the perfect bowl. Mm-hmm. And I did sausage and egg tacos in it. So obviously, you know, grill the sausage down the bottom, let all the fat render, then just dump 10 eggs in it and scramble it all up. Dude, it was perfect.
Yeah. Billy, what are you cooking with when you go out?
Honestly, man, I'm just like you. I got a little 2-burner Coleman with the windscreen, and I've been rocking those forever.
Yeah, there's a reason they've been around for like 50, 60, 70 years, basically unchanged. They are bulletproof, and they work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic portable propane stove or oven or however you want to classify it.
Yeah.
It's been around for years, and everyone that I know has got at least one. Some people have, I think, 5 or 6 just because they have them in different packs or different in their camper, their RV or whatever, you know, for something quick. So they don't have to fire up big stuff, but
that's
what I've always used.
Yeah. And like I said, if I'm going solo or backpacking somewhere and I'm going way out and I have, you know, I'm not going to be coming back to camp during the, at night, I have a little one, like a little single burner that just goes on the top of a 1-pound propane bottle that works, but it's certainly not going to do a whole lot for you. It's good for if you know, heating up water. So if you got like freeze dried meals, it's good for that. You can make a cup of coffee on it, but trying to really make a meal on it is not going to work. You definitely couldn't use cast iron with it. It doesn't put out enough heat. But if you had like a couple of those little 4 or 6-inch aluminum pans that you can get, you know, dirt cheap pretty much anywhere, that sells camping gear, those will work. But again, it's just a tiny little stove. It's not made to really do any meaningful cooking.
No,
the one thing that
go ahead, James.
No, the one thing that I really wanted to start getting into, and I've been watching this guy on Instagram, and this isn't a shout out, you know, I definitely follow it, but Over the Fire Cooking, his Instagram page, is everything he does is strictly just over wood and a grill.
Yep.
And watching him make some of his recipes, really wish I could do that in my backyard, but of course I rent my place.
Yeah.
And I can't really make too many changes to the property without, you know, consent and all that. So, but that's one thing I really want to get into. I mean, obviously he's still using cast iron for like his shrimp and stuff, but most time his steaks, you know, direct contact and the way he controls his fire and his grill, you know, having the cold spot and, you know, the hot spot. Cause that's one thing I never really understood being a first time guy on the grill is I just put the flame underneath the grill and I try to cook.
Yeah.
But understanding how to truly cook, especially steaks, you know, getting that sear and then quickly getting them off the direct heat.
Mm-hmm.
See, I didn't know that. That's how I said it's really easy for someone to mess up on the grill because you're putting in direct heat the entire time. But just watching him, and I'm a big fan of Guga Foods. I don't know if y'all watch him. Mm-hmm. Big, funny guy in Miami. He's typically doing all the comedic stuff with cooking. But just watching them, man, has just got me really wanting to do more outside.
Yeah.
As far as on the cooking aspect goes. Because I got a nice stove inside the house. It's that glass top, and I can't stand it.
Yeah.
I miss my gas stove so much.
Yeah.
Because it is cleaner in my opinion. I know a lot of people are afraid of gas because, you know, you see the videos of unfortunate events where, you know, it catches and it takes out the house. And
yeah.
But I mean, I would prefer gas over electric any day.
Yeah. Same.
It just doesn't taste the same to me.
The convenience factor favors the electric stove because it's just flat. It's easy to clean. You just flip a switch and it comes on. But I think most people who are pretty serious about cooking prefer the gas. It definitely puts out more heat. And you can do a lot more with it, in my opinion. So I think both gas and electric have their place.
Dude, especially when you go to see the Vikings. Have you seen Viking stuff?
I guess not.
The brand? They do like the gas stoves and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, I work on high-end homes. I see a lot of the Viking stuff.
Bro, I see some of that. I'm like, ooh, I want that.
Yeah, and then you see the price tag, and you're like, maybe in 50 years.
Hey, man, I'm starting to really pay attention to this whole, like, selling a kidney thing. You know, 75 G's, that's a lot of money. You only need one of them.
Yeah, right?
True. So the new craze that I've noticed has kicked up with the whole outdoor cooking and stuff, pellet grills.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So I don't know. Obviously, it's been, 10, 11 years now since I've been home. But up here, it's a big thing. Is that something that's really catching on down there, or are we still keeping it traditional back home?
Oh, no.
Nah, man. Everyone's going pellet.
Yep. Really? I have not, and I don't think I know a couple of people that do, but I've never cooked with one, so I don't really know the benefits or how they are to cook with. They look really cool.
I mean, we have a couple of guys that come up to the shop where I work, and they'll bring in some of the food that they cook or smoke or whatever on these pellet grills, and it's not bad, but to me, I feel like it's an acquired taste. It just doesn't have that grill taste to it. It's just kind of bland, almost like you cook it on a stovetop. But I know a lot of them you can control with your phone, you know, as long as you got, I guess, Wi-Fi or something hooked into the grill or you can stay connected somehow on the same network, you can control it with your phone and set the temperature. And it's, I don't know, it just seemed kind of weird. I don't think I'd ever use it.
Yeah, I think so. To me, it's more of like, it's the convenience of electric cooking with the benefits of, you know, over the fire wood cooking, because it is a wood based product. But because it's all temperature controlled, then I guess it only puts out enough pellets to maintain X temperature, whatever you set it at. I guess it's more of a convenience factor, but still kind of an old school way of cooking. I don't know. It's interesting to me, but yeah, I don't see myself ever getting one.
No. Yeah, they're definitely interesting to say the least.
So I've had experience not using them, but I've had experience with friends cooking with like the electric smokers, the pellet smokers, and of course, Spencer, an old coworker of ours, you know, Zach Decker, who actually does it the old fashioned way, and he competes at it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, honestly, I haven't really tasted the difference, in my opinion, if you know what you're doing with it.
Yeah.
To me, I've had some amazing smoked turkey come out of an electric smoker. And some amazing pork loin come out of electric smoker. I've had some phenomenal ribs come off of a pellet smoker before. And then, of course, I had the good old Wagyu brisket off of, you know, the traditional way with you actually staying up throughout the night, throughout the day, throwing wood in there to keep it hot.
Yeah.
You know, all that, the babying of it, man. The process is some of these guys go in for smoking a brisket, dude. I'm just over here like, you know what? I'm just going to drive over to Cooper's. Pay a couple of bucks, get a half pound of that stuff, man. Because, like, when I went there and met with all the guys, a couple of bucks.
Okay.
Well, dude, the amount of people that I got a chance to meet at the Lampasas, like little brisket barbecue cook-off, the little competition they did a couple of years ago. Like everyone starts their day at 12 o'clock in the morning, and they literally take shifts, man. It was so serious. They take shifts on making sure that, you know, it doesn't get too hot. It stays hot. And it's just insane the amount of work that goes into making like a phenomenal brisket. And I'm over here like, that's awesome, man. Tastes delicious. I'm gonna make sure you do this, 'cause I'm probably never going to do this.
Yeah. Same here. You brought up the electric smokers. We bought one for my dad. I mean, this is probably 15 years ago. Well, he doesn't even have it anymore. But I will say we've got some really, really good smoky food out of that thing. I was genuinely impressed.
Oh, yeah.
And as far as convenience goes, it's set it and forget it. And it's really, really convenient and nice to have.
Yep.
If you're not looking to go full on pellet grill or traditional smoker, I think it's a pretty good alternative. And they're not that expensive. You can get them for like probably $150.
Oh yeah. They're everywhere, man. I know Walmart sells a couple of like, what was it called? Pit Boss.
Mm-hmm.
I think they sell the Pit Boss, the electric one.
Yeah.
And then I know for pellets, the real popular one that's been around forever, because a couple of hunting shows I used to watch a decade ago were sponsored by them, is Bradley Smokers.
Yeah.
They're a pellet based smoker. And I've heard great things about them.
Yeah. You got the Bradleys, the Traegers, even Pit Boss, you know. There's tons of them.
Yeah. The one that we sell up at the shop is Camp Chef. They have some pretty big pellet smokers. We actually just got a pretty decent shipment of those in the other day, and they're big. Like, they're very comparable size wise to probably the Oklahoma Joe double barrel smoker that I got. They're shockingly big. You can put a lot of stuff in there, and they've got a big pellet box on there, and it's all controlled by the phone, or you can go out and manually hand set it. I mean, they're nice, but I don't know, kind of skeptical.
Let's say, we're out camping and we want to make a meal. How are y'all setting up your kitchens to cook? Is it just the stove, or what are you doing for dishes and things like that?
So typically I just sit back and watch Spencer do everything.
That's because you're smart.
I help. Yeah. No, if it's not with you, man, because typically when you're in town, you are Camp Chef. I mean, you've had that title since 2020.
Yeah. Thank you.
You know, you've had that title of Camp Chef. Mm-hmm. But when it's like the kids and I, like I said, I'm a huge fan of that 4-in-1. Typically I'm always using the griddle side.
Yeah.
Because it just, the boys love like breakfast 3 times a day. So typically I'm making, fried egg sandwiches for like lunch, typically bacon and egg tacos in the morning.
Yeah, gotta have your breakfast tacos.
Yep. And then the evening is typically going to be burgers.
Yeah.
I mean, we typically take pre-made burgers that we make here at the house with the ground venison.
Mm-hmm.
And like what I did that one time with you, onions, jalapenos, pepper jack cheese, man. And that's the way to go. And of course, a shout out to HEB and their black peppercorn ketchup. Mm. Can't beat it. Yeah. That stuff's so good.
Nope.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're not a ketchup guy?
Oh, no. I'm saying like, no, you can't beat it.
I said you weren't a ketchup guy. I was like, oh, man, we got to fight.
Yeah, right. I'm 100% a ketchup guy. Look, hey, now I'll put you this way. When I go to Whataburger, I steal about 20 packs of the spicy ketchup, okay? So,
again,
dude, Whataburger, don't come
again,
get me.
Again, thank you, HEB.
I steal all your ketchup.
Yep. Yeah, the one thing I got to say, though, because this is still saying on the same time, we're not getting off tangent. Like, between Whataburger, spicy ketchup, and HEB's, HEB literally has, like, an actual, like, pepper flavor heat to it.
Mm-hmm.
What I like about Whataburger is it's spicy, but you can taste it. It's Tabasco. That's really what it is. So I really like that black peppercorn ketchup from HEB because it's actually got that flavor to it, man. Mm-hmm. But, going back to what we're saying, that's essentially what I'm setting up. And if I'm ever trying to do anything differently, like, mix it up, because sometimes you eat the same old stuff every single day, it kind of gets boring. So if the kids want to do, like that one time we did, we actually ate deer heart right then and there this past season.
That was good.
Is mix it up, man. But when it comes to that 4-in-1, 99% of the time, I'm using the griddle side.
Yep. Yeah. Just to be clear, to expand on that deer heart story. So we're in hunting camp and someone shot a deer. And so they decided to keep the heart because I don't know that, I guess they had eaten the heart before and they said it was good. But not everyone in camp had tried it before. So we decided to cook it up. So we handed it over to James and he starts cutting on this thing, and I've never seen anyone cut a deer heart like this, but he started slicing it. I don't even know how to explain it. almost like a Swiss
roll. I can explain it pretty well.
Go for it.
So anyone knows how to, you know, essentially dice up a bell pepper, right?
Hopefully.
Yep.
Open it up, remove the inner core, lay that puppy out, and just slice it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's essentially what I did with the deer heart. I literally just followed the chamber. And when I sliced that first chamber open, I literally just started folding it out until it literally made a skirt steak.
Yeah.
And then we grilled it up and we sliced it up just like that.
Yeah, it was crazy. But
to kind of put it into context, it wasn't just any deer, you know, it was a white-tailed doe, and a good friend of ours, Bob, he had just taken it. It was the first deer of the season. Mm-hmm. And my kids never had it. I've never eaten it. And this man swore by it. He was like, oh, the heart's the best. You got to eat heart. And I've heard my mom telling me stories of my great grandfather, you know, eating scrambled deer brain and eggs and eating the heart. That was like his favorite things. And I was just like, that's so insane. So finally, of course, I'm not going to say no to it. So I was like, yeah, let's do it. And I'm not going to lie, dude, it rivaled the deer tenderloin as far as how tender it was. It was super good. And both the boys didn't care.
Yep.
They grabbed it and they kept grabbing it. It was that good.
It went fast.
Yeah, it was gone.
And so we just did a little bit of oil in the pan, cast iron pan, and what, SPG, salt, pepper, garlic.
I don't even know if we did garlic. I think we just did salt and pepper.
I think you're right, because I'm not sure we had garlic.
I don't think we had garlic there. So. Actually, you know what? No. You were right, because I had just bought that thing of
SPG.
Kinders from Walmart. Yeah. Yep. It was the SPG.
Yeah.
Yep.
So salt, pepper, garlic, and that was it. Just cook it on both
Shout
sides.
Out to Kinders. I love
there
it.
There you go.
oh, yeah.
It was, what, 2-3 minutes on either side? Which,
oh, dude. If that, we cooked that sucker up so quick, man.
Yeah, it's one of those things you definitely don't want to overcook it because it will get tough really quick. But yeah, I mean, 2-3 minutes max. And we only really cooked it that long because we were on a little propane stove and the wind was kind of blowing. So we didn't have the heat we really needed.
Yeah, so it took a little bit longer than expected. Yeah,
so medium high heat and just a couple of minutes either side. Let it rest for a couple of minutes and you're done. Slice it up and go. It was phenomenal. Yeah.
I think what a lot of people struggle with venison is everyone, and I get it, some people can't stand the sight of pink and the sight of quote-unquote blood, but you really should not eat any form of venison well done.
No. No.
No. Never.
And I feel like that's why there's so many people that I've heard be like, oh, I don't like venison. It's too gamey. It's like, yeah, because you literally charred it. It's not even, it's beyond cooked. Like, you have to eat it, you know, medium rare to medium. You have to.
Yeah. Well, and you have to think, these aren't farm raised animals for the most part, granted that we're in Texas. But deer are typically not farm raised animals. They're wild animals and they don't get high fat diets that the beef cows get. And so they're going to be a leaner meat. So you don't want to overcook them because they are going to get tough.
Yeah.
If you overcook them.
Yeah, Goodyear rubber tire is the best way I can explain it. And the only reason I say that is because my wife's friend cooked some and sent some deer home with her the other day. And they were meal prepping. So, and I know they were kind of crunched on time, so they were definitely kind of running around with their heads cut off there. But that deer got overcooked, and man, it is like chewing on rubber.
Yep.
I will not, I will if I need to, but I do not like to meal prep or cook ahead of time with wild game because once you cook it, you need to eat it right then, or as it cools, it's going to start to get tough. I don't know why that is. We should probably talk to somebody who knows more about it than I do. But pretty much every wild game I've ever cooked with, once it starts to cool off, it's going to get tough and you can never get it tender again.
I feel like it's probably because there's just no fat. Yeah. I mean, that's, and I'm probably wrong, but I mean, just in thinking about it, I mean, that's just what seems to make the most sense is because they're so lean and it's just, that's literally natural based food. I mean, there's no sweet feed pellets and protein pellets and whatnot. Well,
in Texas, a lot of ranches have that. A lot of people will feed high protein, high fat diets. But generally it's not what the deer are going to get.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people add like beef soot, pork fat, brisket meat into their venison, especially if they go to like a game processor. They typically offer those services. Mm-hmm. But dude, I've always been an all natty guy, and this isn't nothing against, you know, no pun towards exercise or anything. But as far as for my deer meat, I'm all natural, dude. It's 100% venison. And even when I take like my wild hog in to get turned into sausage, they really highly recommend you add pork fat to it. And I'm like, nope, go straight wild boar, man. I want nothing added to it. Like, I don't know, man. I enjoy the taste of the all natural.
Yeah. I will say though, when you're cooking with wild game, I always like to cook it in a fat or cook it with some fat, whether it's oil or butter or something, just because that's going to help give it a little bit of flavor. Because outside of doing like dry rubs and dry seasonings, it's just not going to absorb that stuff as well, because it doesn't have that fat to render down and absorb that flavor. And so when I'm cooking wild game, I always like to cook it in a fat, and that's going to help with some of the gaminess and the tenderness or the toughness.
You know, it's funny when you talk about like the gamey taste. Steve Rinella had a episode that he did a couple of years ago when he was actually talking about that. I think it was like after a bear hunt in Alaska. I think it was one of the episodes I watched on Netflix. And he was saying the issue that's coming into when people say the meat tastes gamey or it needs this and needs that is because over time, because of what we typically eat, our palates change.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying if you were to go back and just eat the protein for what it is, you'll eventually change. Like, I haven't added any form of external fat to my venison in probably 4 or 5 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it, man.
Yeah.
And I've actually, when we grill our burgers, obviously I like to use the stove. It's the simplest, but what I like about the stove is, you know, putting on that cooling rack on the pan and then doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That way nothing gets kind of like, you know, burnt down on the bottom. Almost like you're smoking it of sorts. And I've never had a dry venison burger, and it's 100% venison. Like I said, I don't add bacon to it or anything.
Yeah.
And they're just as juicy in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. They can definitely be done without the extra fat, which if you're trying to diet or go, you know, cut out some of the fat in your diet, wild game is a pretty good way to do it because it doesn't have a lot of natural fat typically.
Yep.
Yeah. I say a lot of things. Well, I say a lot. When I do my deer sausage or even for burger or chili, I do add a little bit of pork fat. Usually it's probably, let's say 85-15 mix for the most part. It's usually what I do. But other than that, steaks, roast, ribs, sometimes I'll take the ribs off a deer depending what part of the season I'm in, if they're, you know, fatted up enough, meaty enough. Typically, you get a big enough deer, you're really not going to have to worry about that either way. But backstrap, front shoulders, flank steaks, all that. Brisket, I don't add nothing to it. I just throw it on the smoker and let it roll.
So define a big enough deer.
Well, I'm getting a little spoiled with body size up here in Pennsylvania because these deer are plenty big enough. I think the buck I shot this year, field dressed, was I think 170-180, so big buck, big body deer.
Yeah, to put into perspective, the biggest buck I have ever killed was actually this past season as far as weight, and he field dressed at 133, and everyone that saw him was like, that is the largest hill country buck they've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Typically a 6-year-old free range hill country whitetail here in Texas field dresses, especially after the rut, like maybe 105 pounds, maybe.
Yeah.
They're not big. So it's hard to get rib meat. Typically rib meat on the deer down here is chili meat.
Yeah. A lot and of people, even the East Texas whitetail, they're not even big. You know, they might on average, I think they field dress around the 120 mark.
I think a lot of people in Texas don't even bother to save the rib meat from deer. Cause there's just not
straight,
much no, of
straight
it.
Chili grind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does anyone know why mammals will, their body size will increase as the latitude wait, latitude, longitude. Latitude increases, so the further north you go, mammals will tend to have a larger body size. It's called the Bergman's principle.
I don't know the principle, but I know what it's for.
Yeah. Yeah, heat retention, basically.
Yeah.
And it's, nutrient it's storage, retention. Fat storage, things like that for the cold weather. So yep. Moving on from wild game, because we're definitely going to talk more about that later in these podcast episodes, because we could talk about that all day. So what do y'all like to grill up for vegetables when you're outdoors? Do you even like to cook vegetables outside?
Oh,
so what constitutes as a vegetable, though? Because I get this argument all the time.
Who's arguing with you about that?
Yeah.
Because my favorite thing to grill, if you want to call it a vegetable, in my opinion, is good old jalapenos, man. Jalapenos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Gotta have jalapenos, the poppers, man. Or what does your mom call them? Armadillo eggs? Billy? I think your mom calls them armadillo eggs.
Well, poppers or armadillo eggs. It just depends on the day.
Yeah.
Depends on how much wine she's had.
Yeah, she loves her wine, man.
Yes, she does.
Cheryl, if you're hearing this, I'm not trying to dime you out.
I'm not saving you when she starts chunking flip-flops at you.
Oh, dude. The one time that she made them, though, man, when she did it with the back strap in it, those things were fire, dude. And they were big jalapenos, like dang near. I thought they were poblanos because how big they were.
No.
But they were legitimately just massive jalapenos, dude. And they were so good.
Mm-hmm.
Those were homegrown jalapenos.
Yep. Oh, they were so good. But I think another one I really enjoy is you can't go wrong with a good old bell pepper, man. And for the longest time, I hated bell peppers. Yeah. And it wasn't until started getting more into the actual like outdoor cooking that I actually started eating more of my greens, which is funny.
Yeah. There you go.
Not even joking, man. Good old asparagus.
Mm.
Oh, asparagus on the grill.
That's probably my favorite.
Oh, dude. Is it? Yep. Yeah, just don't eat too much of it. You'll regret it later.
Yeah, well, things will smell a little funny, but could be worse.
Could be worse. Well, what about you, Spencer, Camp Chef? What's your favorite veggie on the grill?
Asparagus. Bar none.
100%? Yeah,
100%.
What's number two? What has a second place in your heart?
I do a lot of, you know, aside from like the onions and the jalapenos and the things I typically grill with meat, like I'll grill them literally at the same time. I do a lot of like squash and zucchini. And I'll chop those up, throw them in some aluminum foil, throw those on. If I'm doing like a griddle or a cast iron pan, then I'll just throw them straight on there, get a little bit of a crust on them. And yeah, that's real good. Just salt and pepper. No garlic or anything. It's just really, really good. And it's nice because it's filling also.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't take a lot to fill up some hungry boys.
Oh, dude, the nice filler, in my opinion, you got to go with a good old potato, bro.
Classic. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know how I forgot potatoes, but yeah, they're so versatile.
well, that's the funny thing is, though, because like I said, every time you bring up vegetables, man, you get some people get so technical about, like, you know, tomatoes a fruit.
Yeah.
A pepper is technically a fruit based on, you know, the fact that it bears seeds on the inside and all this stuff. I'm like, dude, I don't care. It's green.
Yeah.
It's a vegetable in my book.
Hey, if your potatoes are green, you probably shouldn't eat those.
Nah, go for it, man.
Yeah, you have fun with that.
Live a little.
I like my Yukon Golds.
Dude, I like them all, man.
Yeah, well, we cook with the Yukon Golds because they're better for your glycemic index. They don't turn into as much glucose in the bloodstream when your body processes it. And so my wife, being a diabetic, it's a lot better for her. But yeah, I love the Yukon Golds and I love the red new potatoes.
Oh, fantastic. Dude, the red's so good.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I leave those whole peel on, man. I don't peel those puppies. Yep.
I'll literally just dice them up into like 1-inch quote unquote cubes and just throw them in a pan, cook them up, some butter. Yep. Oh, yeah, that's good.
Dude, Bob's breakfast slop is like one of my kids' favorite meals now, but it's literally like he'll dice up, he typically does like russets, I guess, because they're just, you can get them all the time here and they're big. But he'll dice them up into, I'd say about 1/8 inch thick.
Oh, wow.
And then he'll take those and cut that in half. But he will grill those up with minced garlic, onions, butter, and garlic powder.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll add the applewood bacon into it. And then what he'll do is once it's all cooked up, dude, he just coats it with a crap ton of cheese. And it turns, yeah. He calls it his breakfast slop, dude. And you just walk up and toss it into a tortilla.
Mm-hmm.
And you just eat that for the morning hunt. Like the whole time you're too busy focused on eating your burritos. But you're so full from it that you're not even hungry. So you're not sitting there getting all like antsy in the deer blind. Like it's so good.
Yeah, that's one that you can, if you're smart about it, you can pack them up and actually take them with you. So about 10 o'clock in the morning when you're sitting in the hunting blind and you're cold and you're hungry and you're miserable, you can whip out that extra breakfast taco and that can really keep you going.
Yep.
Yeah. Speaking of things that will help keep you going, especially when it's cold, coffee. I know we talked about it a little bit in episode one. But yeah, it's a huge,
we got into
it. It is a huge part of basically all outdoor cooking, in my opinion.
Three times a day.
Yeah, for sure. When it's cold, when it's early, it's just a classic go-to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to knock instant coffee because it's super convenient and I use it all the time. I don't mess with the big percolators anymore. It's just, no, I like to heat up water in my little aluminum pan and it's quick. And then I can just put it in with some instant coffee and eggnog or milk or black or however you like it. Yeah, it's a must. It's a requirement.
Black and honey.
Black with
just like
honey.
I said in the last, less like in the last episode, dude. I'm straight up black and honey.
There you go. That's your new nickname. Yeah,
I'm as white as you can be. If you don't know,
yeah, pretty white for sure. So yeah, I love my coffee. I will do tea every now and then, or like I said, if it's cold, some apple cider. I'm a sucker for apple cider when it's cold. And I'm not a snob about it. I'll go buy the packs of it at the store, the instant stuff. It's just as good. Well, maybe not just as good, but it's good enough for me.
Now, apple cider is really good. The one that I really personally like is just green tea.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to go anything but coffee, it's going to be just a hot cup of green tea.
Yeah. I'm going to go black tea, some Earl Grey. Billy, what kind of tea are you drinking?
Sweet. I swear to God, if you say chai tea, I'm going to disown you.
He likes his boba.
I do not drink that stuff. No, I will make my tea, whatever, just basic tea I can get my hands on, and then I'm going to pour about a pound of sugar in it.
There you go.
And then I'm going to rock and roll.
Like a true Southern gentleman. Got to have your sweet tea.
Yes, sir.
I'm totally on board with that. I like it.
Dude, I'm not going to lie, though. I thought I really liked sweet tea until I just so happened to catch when McDonald's first came out with theirs a couple of years ago.
No.
And I didn't realize. I got a cup of the bottom of the batch.
Whoa.
And that was straight syrup, dude. I threw that stuff away so fast.
Yeah. First off, tea at McDonald's is going to be a hard pass for me, regardless.
Dude.
100%.
Yeah.
That's not even tea. I don't even know what you would classify.
Yeah, if I'm
as.
Getting tea, it needs to be from a Southern food chain, like Chicken Express.
Huh?
Yeah, Chicken Express sweet tea.
No.
Yeah, for sure.
No.
100%.
Whataburger.
No, I actually don't like Whataburger's tea.
Are you even a Texan?
Born and raised. Although, to be fair,
he could be saying he likes In-N-Out more than Whataburger.
Oh, no, not true. to be fair, I didn't have Whataburger until I was like 30. No lie.
Oh, sweet Jesus. You really are not from Texas.
Oh, I'm from here. I lived,
Have you ever been to the DFW earlier?
Say what?
Have you ever been to the DFW area there, Billy?
Yeah, one time, and I really don't remember it because I was pretty much drunk the whole time.
Dude, that place is so massive with so many options for food.
Yeah.
Like here in San Antonio, the only options you have is either Mexican or fast food. So
it's San Antonio.
Even if they had other options in San Antonio, I wouldn't eat them. If you're in San Antonio, you either get fast food or Mexican. That's it.
dude, I'm up there in Dallas, Fort Worth. Like, I got options.
Yeah. Literally anything you want.
Anything you want, man, they got it.
And they got 50,000 of them.
And that's the way Austin's getting, man.
Yeah.
Austin's getting so many new chains and new restaurants and things like that. Mm-hmm. Kind of makes me miss it. So I'm going to call it for what it is. I'm gonna talk like I'm Gen Z right now, but I'm a foodie, man. I love to eat. I love to eat new stuff. But I'm a big critic, too. If it sucks, I'm going to tell you it sucks. I'm never coming back.
Well, I'm glad you're still eating my food. That's a good sign.
Oh, dude. Between you and Bob, bro, we got to do an episode of a ranch cook-off, and we got to record it.
That sounds good to me, for sure.
Hey, well, it'll work out perfect. I'll be back down in November. We can hit it off right towards the end of November. I'll come out, and everyone will be out there, and we'll just have a grand old cook-off.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and then don't worry, we'll eat some of that tuna sashimi. Because Spencer and I are going to be going tuna fishing before you get down here.
Yep, about a month before.
Yep.
That's fine. I'll be enjoying my last month in Pennsylvania, shooting ducks all of October.
There you go.
Nice. Just hijack one of those horse carriages for me, okay?
Yeah. I'm sure the Amish won't mind. Or the Mennonites. I don't know which one you have in there, in that area.
Here's the thing. Those things stink.
Cool, yeah.
Like worse than a roadkill in a Texas summer. Like anything, I'm not hauling that or putting that nowhere near my belongings when I come down. Yep. Ain't happening. I'm sorry. If you want one, you can figure out how to get one back when you come up here and help me move back.
I don't want one. I just want to see you in one. I think that'd be hilarious. Your beard's dang near like it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you need to shave the mustache and the goatee and go with like the bottom beard.
And I'll start calling you Jebediah.
No thanks. No thanks. I'm keeping
call you
this.
Billadiah.
Ooh.
No. No.
Sorry. Willadiah. You got to keep it formal.
That's for Jesus.
It should probably be noted that we have nothing against the Amish.
Oh, dude, they're the best, though, bro.
Yeah.
They are the sweetest. My first time ever interacting with the Amish was actually at a farmer's market, and I'm a huge, huge fan of farmer's markets. Like, I love those places. I love getting fresh produce from them when it's in season. Like right now, you know, for all my people in the hill country, the peaches are finally coming into season. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, dude. And the first time I met Amish was in Missouri at a farmer's market. And they are the sweetest, most humble people you can meet and going through all their stuff. And like I said, everything they do is just day-to-day life, man. It's like, you know, what we did 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So you'd be sitting there and they have their homemade breads and pastries and they have their crop, and dude, I spend hundreds of dollars at their booth that day in Missouri, but I couldn't get enough of it, man. Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, I'll try that. Yeah. I'll try this. I'll take that.
They were homesteading before homesteading was cool.
Dude.
Yeah.
And some of the best moonshine I've ever had, Amish.
Interesting.
Hey, they got their 10%ers, man. I'm telling you, every culture has them. I'm not trying to dime them out, but
the rum spring of holdouts.
Right?
Yeah. So trying to get back to food, what are some of the challenges that people are going to face when they're trying to cook outdoors?
The weather.
That's the big one, right?
Yep.
That is the obvious. Yeah. Is the weather.
So what are some things that people can do to help mitigate the weather?
Canopies,
yeah. Canopies come with their own challenges because they're typically, you know, sloped upwards and like to collect air at the top. And that means that smoke is going to collect at the top. So you kind of have to be careful. Get a vented canopy if you can to let that smoke out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything to block the wind is usually a good sign. Good thing to have.
Not to mention the Texas, the stinking sun.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
That sun is brutal. And then you buy a fire too. It's miserable.
Yeah. I would say that we use in Texas, we're using canopies probably five times as often for sun, more so than rain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we love the rain. They'll cook in the rain. Does that sun though? Canopies are coming out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So sun, rain, wind, bugs.
Yeah.
Especially mm-hmm. if you're cooking at night, they will start to swarm and they are the worst.
Yeah. Especially if you're using a fire because they're drawn to the light.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're yep. using like headlamps or something to see.
I can't, dude. I can't do headlamps in the, when I know bugs are out. I hate that. I turn that stuff off so quick.
Yeah. So I've actually been looking at, for my canopy, they have these zip-up screen walls. And I know that's a little bougie, but honestly, as often as we cook in the dark, because it's breakfast and dinner, because we're hunting mm-hmm. in the morning and the evening.
And then we hunt till dark.
Yeah. If you're yep. out, you're cooking before the sun comes up and you're cooking after the sun goes down. And so you have to have light. And so the bugs are going to be around. And so, yeah, screen rooms, screens for your canopies. It's a little bougie, but I think it's going to be worth it.
Yeah. Not to mention the one thing you're going to deal with, especially if you're really going to get into it more traditionally, is just the fire itself. I know we hit on fire safety and all that in the camping episode, but you're going to run into that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, we're talking about that whole having a cold spot, hot spot, direct heat, indirect heat.
Yeah.
You know, keeping that flame nice and high. And then the one thing that I can speak from experience, because I did this, and Matt, Devin, if you're listening, you'll remember this, is when we caught my mom's grill on fire because of how many burgers we were grilling. We actually had a grease fire break out, and we literally dang near melted her pit to the ground.
Wow.
That- yeah, it was bad, dude. We were like on, I think we were grilling over 100 burgers for, I think it was Calvin's birthday party. And because we were expecting like 50 people. So we're like, oh, we need to at least have two burgers apiece. And by batch number three, I guess enough grease had built up and we weren't paying attention. The fire caught it. And yeah, we had a runaway grill.
Yeah. So don't do that.
Yeah. And don't, I didn't do this. Okay. I'm saying I didn't do this, but I make sure a listener doesn't do this. Do not throw water on a grease fire.
Yeah. It's
don't do it.
You're just going to spread it around. Don't.
Yes, grease sits on top of water. I'm not getting the science of it, and it'll still burn, and it'll go everywhere.
Yeah, including yep. on you, most likely.
Yep.
So, yeah.
That's what equipment maintenance is for.
There you go.
Or having a giant thing of salt next to you, because that yeah. comes in handy.
Or a fire retardant blanket. I know a lot of people are starting to put those in their like emergency kits. Those are super handy to have, and it can be I've even seen like the, what are they called? The Mylar blankets, you know, they fold down to the, yeah. the size of a credit card, almost just a little bit thicker. And they're always nice to have, especially if you're going to be dealing with temperature extremes. But yeah, I've seen mm-hmm. people put those just to smother a fire. Cause that's a big thing with killing a fire. If you remove the oxygen from the equation, the fire will go out.
Yeah.
There's weird exceptions, but generally if you remove the oxygen, the fire is going to go out.
Yep.
So smothering the fire, and the same goes for campfires. You know, you're getting ready to go to bed at night, you know, everything's kind of winding down. You want to make sure the fire's out. Water helps, but smothering the fire with dirt also works really well.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely make sure your fire is out, especially if you're in a really dry area like we are a lot of times, where a brush fire can very quickly escalate and get way, way out of control.
Yeah.
So yeah, fire safety, learning how to build a fire and maintain a fire is a very, very nice skill to have. Anyone can cook over an open flame, but to do it well and to make it enjoyable is... it's night and day, honestly, because no one likes to sit around.
It's an art form.
Yeah. No one likes to sit around a campfire and, you know, have the wind change direction. And then all of a sudden the smoke's blowing right in your face, and you could be like my wife and yell rabbit, rabbit. And yeah, that stupid superstition doesn't work. Learn how to build a fire correctly. Come on. It's not rocket science. Well, it applies to rocket science, but it's really not that hard.
Yeah. No, and I think the nice thing about it too is there's with all the different variants that are out there as far as doing over, you know, actual flame or doing it in a grill or, you know, doing it in a barbecue pit or a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
Man, there's it's the fire is your number one thing because it's what's going to either make or break your meal. And I know for a lot of people, you know, how well a meal turns out for their family is a huge sense of pride. Yep. And if it's terrible, your heart breaks.
Yeah. There's nothing worse than cooking for 2 hours and, you know, being really excited to feed a bunch of people and everyone's like, this is good. And then they turn and spit it out.
Yeah.
That's a terrible feeling. And I've been in that situation. So I know.
Oh dude, I got to say this one, man. And if she ever listens to this, I doubt it. But if she does, my ex-wife, man, I told her that the one thing I really love to do with deer backstrap is to, just deep fry it, you know, traditional deep fried backstrap. Mm-hmm. And she tried to surprise me, by preparing it, but she thought she had to marinate the backstrap before she deep fried it.
Oh boy.
It was so bad, dude. Our dog Cricket wouldn't even eat it.
Yeah.
She sniffed it and walked away like blatantly. He was like, I'm not touching it. Dude, I laughed so hard and my ex-wife, dude, was so embarrassed. I thought it was funny. She was upset because she ruined the backstrap. Mm. But I was just like, yo, this is awesome. Cricket straight up just said, get that away from me. And she walked off. Yeah. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I've made some of those meals.
Oh, I think we all have. I don't think that anyone who cooks can say that they have not had that happen.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's, I wouldn't call it a rite of passage, but you have to suck at cooking before you can be good at cooking. You have to make mistakes.
Yeah.
So if I could leave the listeners with anything, it's like, just get out there and try. You're going to suck just for a while. Petroleum. It's not, you're going to make some really bad food, but then eventually you're going to start to make better and better food.
Yeah, you'll get to a point where you found that seasoning mix that, you know, everyone likes and the different vegetables and stuff that, you know, when you saute them or you cook them or smoke them or grill them or whatever, even with the right seasoning mix there, sometimes you season them, sometimes you don't or whatever. Mm-hmm. You'll eventually find it, but it's not going to happen right off
the bat. Yeah, there are a lot of things that have to come together and you have to do right in order to make a good meal. And any one of them can screw it up. So just get out there, just try it. Don't be afraid to try something new. If you've never cooked with wild game or with, you know, whatever you want to try cooking with, just try it. Because if you don't, you'll never figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's all the top chefs in the world. And honestly, don't get me wrong, he does some outdoor cooking, but he doesn't really do a lot of it. Gordon Ramsay. Mm-hmm. He didn't become a sensation overnight. Yeah. Did it over years. Years of practice, years of working hard and, you know, studying and everything that he needed to do to now he's multimillion dollar top man in the world as far as cooking goes. Yep. So even the greats, they've been there. You gotta start somewhere.
Start somewhere. I was just about to say that. Yep. All right. Any closing thoughts, gentlemen?
Well, honestly, I think this would be a perfect time closing because by the time this episode actually airs, it's actually relatively close to Memorial Day weekend. Mm-hmm. And so with Memorial Day, good old brats, man. Brats, hot dogs, burgers.
Yep.
And guys, you want to talk about something you can grill and still look like a boss? Just grill some hot dogs and brats. You can't really mess those up.
Yeah.
And they are super easy to do.
I would say that's step one for anyone looking to get into outdoor cooking. Because they're almost foolproof. Yeah. Almost.
Even if you burn them, there's people that actually like having their brats and or their sausage or their hot dogs completely charred up. And so you're going to have someone enjoy it. So don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you completely burn it all the way through.
And then the dogs will usually enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Unless it's Cricket.
Yeah. Cricket's a little bougie.
Yeah. Unless it's deep fried teriyaki marinade backstrap, then yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, don't start there for sure.
I'll never forget that, man. That was so funny. And I hope she listens to this because she's gonna know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's one of those bad memories that's fun to look back on.
Oh yeah. Oh dude, like I was talking about when I burnt the grill down. Mm-hmm. Like that was bad, dude. It literally, like, the paint blistered off the grill. It was going up.
Yeah.
So is this why you don't let James cook in camp, Spencer?
Yes.
I wasn't going to say that, but, you know.
I'll say it. I don't care.
I put two together pretty quickly.
This is why I got Spencer and Bob.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, man. I find that hard to believe that you can't cook, because all those catfish that we caught years ago back at NAC and you cooked them up, they were good.
Well, that's what we're getting at. I wasn't originally good. I was pretty bad, and it took practice. Because, like, with me, you know, obviously we're trying to close this thing out, but, you know, I grew up with my grandmother on my dad's side, my grandmother on my mom's side. All the women in my family, dude, everything was made from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So when they would cook dinner, I would watch them prepare the flour for frying anything, you know, all the prep work that went into it. And so I used to always ask to help out, like, can I help out? Can I do, you know, help you with this? So, you know, whether it's from peeling potatoes at the age of like 6, or if it's doing the whole toothpick trick inside the grease to see if it's even hot enough to put the food in. Because you never want to throw your food in cold grease. Nope. You want to get it to hot before you do it.
Yep.
You know, and all those little things I learned. But when I finally decided, like, oh, now I can do this, it's a different ball game. You know, you watch mm-hmm. people do it, then you go to do it. And yeah, you're going to mess it up.
Yeah, you will forget, you know,
that's
things.
The whole thing about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like making sure your grease gets drained before you keep going and cooking away with burgers. Yeah.
Oops. Oopsie. Yeah. Well, like James alluded to earlier, I think we will be doing some video content on outdoor cooking. Actually, I know we are. We like to do
we
it.
We are 1,000%.
It's going to be coming 100%. For sure. Hopefully next weekend and the next coming weeks, I'll get down and to James's place, and we'll try to do some outdoor cooking. Hopefully we can get us a good wild hog.
Oh, dude, for sure.
Because if we take one, those back straps are going straight on the grill.
Yep.
For sure.
Yep, and I'll try to do a catch and cook out here with the trout as well. So,
dude, I love trout. Trout is so good.
There's plenty of them up here, my man.
Yep.
And you know it.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Sounds good. Well, what do we have coming up in the next couple of weeks? Anything fun for people to look forward
to? Dude, we actually, for the first time, we can actually say this, because we've been doing a lot of planning, because this is finally happening. So we have a lot coming up. Definitely tune in, because we definitely got a Fitness in the Outdoor series that's going to be launching here soon. You know, because anything that you can possibly think of in the outdoors requires some form of physical ability. And so we're going to be going into depth with men, women, kids, because we have a bunch of different listeners. So that's going to be an awesome.
Yeah. And I would like to point out that even if you don't really get into the outdoors, which this would be a weird place if that's the case, maybe you're just trying to learn. But it will be fitness in general, but it will be more geared towards the outdoors. So there's still going to be a lot of good information out there. Even if you're not going on a New Mexico elk hunt and going to get into the mountains, there's going to be lots of other good basic information.
Yep.
And, you know, some pretty advanced information as well being given who we're going to be having on.
Oh, yeah. Getting a lot more guests on. We're going to be starting our gun talk series. Mm-hmm. So we'll be getting into a lot of different people that we know within the firearms community and just enthusiasts that we know through the inner circles that we have, and get in the depths of different calibers, different styles of hunting, because obviously that's a big thing. And then, of course, recreational shooting, and even more importantly, you know, home defense, self-defense, mm-hmm. things like that. So we're gonna be diving into a lot of different topics. So definitely want to stay tuned. Definitely get a lot more special guests on. So
yeah,
it's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to
and
it.
I think also this month we have some land management coming up. We're going to start getting into that. So that will be the first episode in what will be many episodes on taking care of your land.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And then even more importantly, because we talked about this in the camping episode, summertime's coming around, and summertime in Tejas is hog hunting season.
Mm-hmm.
I know people hogs year round, but summer pastime, because typically turkey's just about to wrap up here in the state of Texas. I know turkey's about to launch or just launched in PA.
Yep. It just started about a week ago.
Yep. So now what typically is this lull between seasons. Dude, it's pig time and exotics as well. So we'll be talking a little bit about that too with the exotics, because we have the lovely Audad sheep that run through my family's property. So mm-hmm. definitely got our fair share and got occasional access, but they're very few and far between. But But definitely getting more towards preparation for season as well. So getting lanes cleared, prepping hunting spots, going into new areas that we never touched, or reopening old areas where my grandfather ran the place. So there's gonna be a lot of cool stuff going in with that.
For sure. A lot to look forward to.
Yep.
Oh, so yeah. Billy, what should people do if they want to hear more content like this?
Well, if you want to hear more content like this, you need to tune in to Get Out.
I love it. It's still good after four episodes. Yes,
sir. Right?
Yes, sir.
All right, gentlemen. Sounds good. Thanks for being here tonight. We'll see y'all later.
Oh, for sure.
See y'all
next week.
Yes, sir.